Welcome to the Casey Kohar Show, a celebration of words. I'm delighted to have as my guest today Thomas Perry. We'll be discussing Mr. Perry's new novel, Silence, published by Harcourt. And first of all, Tom, thank you very much for taking time to speak with us today.
Well, thank you very much for having me.
And I would like to take the listeners back to a point in time. It was around 1984. I walked up the spiral staircase of a mysterious bookshop in New York City where a bearded man was seated named Otto Penzler. And he handed me a copy of The Butcher's Boy and said, "You have to read this." And that was the first exposure I had to your work. That novel won an Edgar Award for Best First Novel in 1983. And Silence, which we're going to discuss today, is part of the Otto Penzler imprint with Harcourt. And if you would, tell us a little bit about your relationship with Otto Penzler and how Silence ended up coming to publication the way it did.
Well, Otto is somebody that I think everybody in the mystery world knows or has certainly heard of or something. I knew him because over the years I would go to his store to sign books. I don't spend much time in New York City for any other purpose, but that's, I also had the experience of going to that bookstore and going up the spiral staircase and, seeing this sort of, it was an amazing place up there. It was a kind of, it was almost like a movie set.
Yes, it was.
Right? I've always accused Otto of being a James Bond villain, but I don't know.
Yeah.
It's great. Great second floor loft with every book imaginable shelved around you. And,
yeah.
Sign books and talk to them.
Yeah, it's a wonderful, wonderful mystery world there. And
what happened was that, we got to know each other, and at one point he asked me to do a story for one of his anthologies. A couple of years ago, it was called Murderer's Row. It was about baseball stories, and a lot of people were writing them. And he happened to hit me at a time when I was having one of those sort of illusions of, that I was bulletproof and could do almost anything because I just finished a book. And you have that little moment when you think, gee, sure, I could do a short story this afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
Send it right to you. Of course, I spent like the rest of the summer writing and rewriting this darn thing. I forgot how hard it was to write short fiction. And really, I hadn't done any in 20 years. And, for me, short fiction is a situation where I start to write a novel, I only get a couple hundred pages into it, and then I set it aside.
Yes. Yeah.
Working. But I worked with Otto for that, and at a certain point, I decided that I really needed to change publishers, and Otto happened to be doing some editing. Heavy. He has an imprint for Harcourt, and so my agent got in touch with him.
Beautiful. Well, Silence is a wonderful novel, and for the longtime fans of Thomas Perry, you're going to love this novel because it has what I would call the traditional elements of a Thomas Perry novel: the intrigue, the plot twists, the well-drawn characters, and the pacing. It's a real page-turner, and I really like the character Jack Till that you write about, the protagonist in Silence. And if you would tell the listeners a little bit about Jack Till, his background as he enters the story in Silence.
Jack Till is a former Los Angeles homicide detective. Excuse me, and he's retired, and he's begun a detective agency of his own, and he has an office that's within walking distance of my house.
Okay.
So, he is essentially a compassionate sort of a guy. He's a single father, and he has a daughter who has Down syndrome, who doesn't play a huge part in the in the plot, but she is a very important part of his life.
Mm-hmm.
Jack is a guy who, when he was just starting his detective agency, he came to work one morning and he found a woman waiting for him, a sort of relatively young woman who appeared appeared to have been in a car accident. She looked as though she has some terrible injuries, and he assumed that probably what she wanted was to hire him to do some investigating having to do with that auto injury. But what she tells him is that somebody beat her up with a baseball bat, and she is in terrible, terrible danger, and all she really knows about it is that she believes that the person who attacked her was hired by the boyfriend of a woman who worked for her at her restaurant. She was a part owner of a sort of trendy restaurant in Los Angeles called Bank. And at one night, she saw this guy manhandling this waitress in the parking lot and started toward them. And they got into a car and left. And she never saw the waitress again. So, you know, what she believes happened was some sort of possibly a murder. She doesn't know the name of the man, because the waitress would never told her.
Mm-hmm.
And she didn't get a good enough look at him to be able to identify him. So the only thing that she can possibly do is run. And, you know, Jack sort of sits her down and tells her, yeah, okay, you know, if you don't want me to protect you or you don't want me to look for these people, you know, I can teach you something. I can teach you how it is that we professional police officers look for somebody, and I'll teach you how to avoid those methods. You know, after that, you're on your own. You're going to have to learn how to hide, and I'll help you. So he gives her a couple of weeks of lessons, leaves her near the Santa Barbara airport, and he just goes back home.
Mm-hmm.
6 years later, he realizes by looking at the Los Angeles Times that her former fiance and business partner in the restaurant, who has become a sort of well-known chef now, has been charged with her murder. So I don't know. I'm not sure.
Yeah, that's a great intro, and longtime listeners know we never give away plot twists or endings or anything.
Yeah.
And I think what you just described there, Tom, contains the elements of the cat and mouse that the readers have come to love about your novels. You wrote the Jane Whitefield series, and you write very well about helping people disappear. And what that's part, I think, of the fascination of reading one of your novels is that as technology changes, as sophisticated police work changes, it becomes harder and harder to stay hidden, and that becomes part of the chase. Particularly when Paul and Sylvie Turner enter the picture, because there's a despicable character who has a lot invested in that Wendy Harper stays disappeared. And that, I think, is really part of the intrigue and the fun and the entertainment of your novels, is as a reader trying to figure out how she and Jack Till are going to stay one step ahead of people that are obviously chasing them, and the plot becomes more complex and really takes the reader in places I don't think they're expecting to go.
Oh, that was well put. I like that. You avoided giving it away, but you alluded to it very well.
So this concept of disappearing.
I really enjoyed this book because, you know, what's really going on in this particular situation, I don't know. I mean, I guess in one way my books are all sort of a paranoid dream.
Yeah.
The person who is being chased and who wants to, avoid some sort of terrible fate is always in a situation where they have to learn to be sort of hyper-aware. And to, you know, so sort of always try to find the simplest and most direct way of getting places, but they're always looking over their shoulders and always sort of learning to find ways of making it difficult to be followed. And in this particular case, what I sort of like about it is that what Jack Till has to do after these 6 years is to go find the person he taught how to be an expert at escaping. And so Jack has to binder. He has absolutely nothing to go on except the things that led up to the day when he left her at the Santa Barbara airport. And so what, in a sense, he's doing is following the very first part of her escape. And what he's got to do is a very delicate thing. That is, he has to find her. He has to persuade her to come back to Los Angeles to prove that she's alive and can't possibly have been murdered. But at the same time, he has to help her evade the people that he knows must have framed her boyfriend in order to lure her out so she'd be killed.
Mm-hmm.
In a way that the trick has to be repeated. You know, he has to
yes.
do something the second time in a much harder way when he knows there are people just waiting for them in Los Angeles.
Yeah. And, Tom, when you were writing this, I was thinking, as I read it stylistically, to combine the backstory that you needed to provide the reader with about the history and to maintain the dramatic tension and the suspense, that's a high wire to walk, which you do brilliantly in Silence. And I really didn't realize until I had finished the novel what a great job you had done with that, because Paul and Sylvie Turner are a fascinating married couple, and they've been married 15 years, and so they have the kind of problems that people have that have been married 15 years. But yet they're a team, and they function very smoothly. But you weave their story in without losing the pace of the narration, which I imagine is a difficult thing to pull off when you're writing a novel like this.
Well, yeah, there are really two things that you have to do in a book, and or this kind of a novel anyway. You really have to keep those pages turning. You have to keep the reader from being bored. In other words, you have to do what, Elmore Leonard always said, which is to, cross out the things that the reader is going to skip.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
At the same time, what I really wanted to do in this was to show how at any time when two human beings collide in the world and there's some sort of an event, what comes with them is everything that's happened to them to make them who they are, and also everything about them that it sort of includes the things that they want out of life and so on, so that in a sense what I wanted to do was to have all of that stuff be familiar to the reader by the time something really big happens.
Mm-hmm.
And as to whether it was a complete success, I'm not sure. I think it's a question of degree. It's possible that at some points, I may have included too much or too little or something, but it's really an extra level of complexity that I haven't always been able to handle.
So I
like it in that sense.
Yeah, I like that part of it too, Tom. I thought that one of the things I like is when an author gives the reader the benefit of the doubt that they're going to be able to follow where he or she is going. And particularly with mystery and thriller readers, I think, let's talk for a moment, if we could, about mystery and thriller readers. I think you have with readers of series or authors like Thomas Perry, you have a group of people that really like a certain sophistication in a novel and will go there with the author that sometimes I think gets overlooked in the literary marketplace. I think a lot of the novels, some of the best novels being written right now are in the mystery thriller genre, and part of it is because of the loyalty of the readers.
Well, it's not just the loyalty, but the sophistication of the readers that I like.
Mm-hmm.
Right now I'm on tour. I'm sort of, maybe 1 foot into my the tour for this book, and I'm really sort of looking forward to the next event at a bookstore, which is tonight in San Francisco. And really, because every year I just love to go out and talk to the people that go to the signings. I mean, I just these are not my readers. They are everybody's readers. They're the people who read everything. And, you know, often I learn a whole lot from their questions and their reactions to books, and, you know, including my books, but also things that they recommend that I read, other people's books, all kinds of things. I mean, I really do find that the people that I talk to, and also the ones who email me at my website, are incredibly sophisticated. And one of the things I love about it is that they often have special bits of knowledge that I don't have and have no access to, which they'll bring up either as an idea or as, you know, in some cases a correction of something that I did in a book. Mm-hmm. You know, I'll give you an example. I mean, I got an email from a guy about 2 years ago, or maybe more, actually. Anyway, in which what he saw was an episode that I had done in a Jane Whitefield novel, in which what Jane does is goes to the hotel of a girl that she's trying to save. And because the girl has checked into the hotel with her credit card, but she hasn't checked out yet, what Jane does is comes in and pays her hotel bill in cash.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the notion being that Jane will have accomplished, making sure that no record of that transaction, you know, appears on the girl's credit record. If somebody was looking at her credit record, they would be able to, you know what
sure.
town she was in.
Sure.
Well, the problem with that, that idea was, as this man emailed me, what happens when you check into a hotel is you show them your credit card, and they actually run it. They run a like a $100 check, you know, just to see whether your card's the real thing or not.
Okay.
And then, you know, when you actually have a charge, they get rid of that.
Okay.
It stays on the credit record until the end of the month.
That's interesting.
Yeah, and this is something that, you know, the reason that this man knew it is because that's what he does for a living.
Mm-hmm.
He runs that kind of credit thing. But anyway, that's the sort of thing that readers will either think of or know that will help you, and it's absolutely invaluable. And I like the attitude of mystery readers because, you know, they're in it with you.
Yes.
You know, they want you to succeed. They want your book to be really good, and if they know something that can help you and that will help you make your next book good, they'll share it with you.
Well, you know, it's nice to hear an author say that, because I think that readers maybe at times are afraid to send an email like that, and I think you received it in the spirit in which it was intended, which was, hey, I really liked your book. There was one thing, I was paying so close attention, there was one thing I caught. And that's really paying the author a very high compliment, I think.
Well, you know, it's generous. It's
yes.
generous. And, I see that in people that, come to bookstores for these signings or get on, sort of contact me by email. And there's also, I don't know, there's something about the Internet that sort of spurs generosity in people.
Yes.
enough.
Yeah.
I don't know why what that is, but... You know, people often will, sort of make these nice gestures.
Mm-hmm. And I think the fans of the Jane Whitefield series will like Silence, recently published by Harcourt, because it has, you're dealing with the theme of the disappearance, and you have the cat and mouse aspect to it. And when you started that series out, Tom, which is five books long at this point in time. Did you have any idea when you wrote the first one that she was going to catch on the way she did and develop the audience that she developed?
No, I didn't. Actually, what I was doing when I wrote Vanishing Act, was the reason that I ended up with that particular story and set of circumstances and character really had more to do with what I had done before that than anything else. I had just written... Well, first I have to sort of preface this with the fact that the way I write is if I have an idea that I think is a good one or might be a good one, I'll pursue it as far as it goes, even if that means writing a whole book that I end up setting aside, or, you know, following some dead end for a couple hundred pages before I set that aside. But in this particular case, what I had done was I wrote the ultimate Los Angeles earthquake novel. It was absolutely accurate in every detail that I could make it. I looked up, all of the latest geological information as to what was going to happen. I had maps showing where all of the underground pipelines were for things like natural gas and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I had the state of California's contingency plans showing which of the overpasses were going to fall under what circumstances.
Wow.
So forth. I did an incredible amount of research. I had characters all over Southern California who were very different from each other, whose lives were being affected in big ways by this sudden earthquake. And, I was working away, and my manuscript started to get thicker and thicker and thicker. And finally, it reached 865 pages. And when I thought, gee, I really better kind of take a look at this. Is this really? And even my wife couldn't read it. It was so boring. It was just absolutely deadly. It was really fun.
Yeah, that's bad when your wife doesn't like it.
Yeah, well, my wife is pretty generous about that kind of thing. You know, she'll read read almost anything, but this was let's say her tact was put to the supreme test. And so I set that aside, and I realized that probably the problem was that I had what I really needed to do was sort of ground myself in the part of the country where I had grown up. Now, Southern California is big and complicated, and nobody really cares how accurate your research is or something. It's really not a very exciting story in this particular case. So what I did was I decided to try and write about Western New York, specifically the part of Western New York between Buffalo and Niagara Falls along the Niagara River, where I had grown up. And I started to do research about it, and then I realized at a certain point that most of the exciting things that happened in that part of the world happened before Europeans arrived.
Mm-hmm.
It's always been an important spot. It's a place where, there are all sorts of Neolithic, sort of Paleo-Indian sites right around there. You know, there's just 60 or 70 miles south of there is where the Meadowcroft rock shelter is, where
sure.
There were people living 14,000 years ago. It's it's an incredible spot.
Yeah, I'm familiar with the area. It's beautiful.
Yeah, well, it is, and it's, well, anyway. So what I decided to do was to try and find a character who would kind of convey all of that and who would be aware of it. That is, that it would be somebody who would sort of carry in her mind all of the various dimensions of that part of the world. One is sort of the historic, that is any spot that you, or let's say there are a lot of spots that have a kind of historic meaning, that is, things happened there,
Mm-hmm.
Giant events occurred that made a difference. Also, that there's all kinds of sort of, personal associations that a person has with the place that they live. And I ended up with this character who would be a Seneca Indian, because that would allow me to put all those dimensions in there. The Western New York is essentially the Seneca world,
mm-hmm.
from approximately Sotus Bay which is west of Syracuse, east of Rochester, to the end of the state where the Niagara River is, with sort of the Seneca world. And, Niagara Falls isn't just Niagara Falls, it's where Hino the Thunderer lives. He lives underneath the falls.
Okay.
Sort of minor deity.
Yeah.
And, it was sort of fun to write that kind of character. And at the same time, I kind of got an idea about what I wanted her to do for a living. was watching, I think it was CNN, and there was a major plane crash, and the news person, the news guy, said they haven't released the names of the victims yet because such a large proportion of airline passengers fly under false names. That was in the old days.
Yeah, in the old days, yeah.
People actually did that.
Yeah.
You could walk into an airport and hand the guy $500 and get a ticket to anywhere under, you know, the name Popeye the Sailor.
Right.
Wanted to.
Right.
And, you know, but I was really curious about it, and I thought to myself, gee, you know, what's going on here? You know, why would people be flying under false names? What's the point?
Mm-hmm.
And then I realized that it was probably people trading in frequent flyer miles.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, which, you know, those of us who were flying in those days, you remember if people did that.
Sure.
But anyway, it got me thinking, and I thought to myself, okay, you know, there are really an incredible number of people in this country who are using false names at any given time for one reason or another. And, you know, if that's true, then, you know, there's somebody selling people IDs.
Sure.
That, you know. So I began to think in those terms, and I came up with Jane, who was doing these things for absolutely humane, unselfish reasons. So she was a real find for me.
Oh, that's fascinating how that evolved. And I think, Tom, one of the things that people find attractive about your novels, about the mystery thrill genre, is that justice is done. People, you know, in Silence, you know, a pivotal part of the plot is that Wendy Harper is going to do the right thing. She's going to show integrity, and she's not going to avoid the consequences of doing what she needs to do. And that's refreshing, I think, in the world we live in. That's one of the attractions of, I think, of the genre, is the reader's trust that integrity will play some part in the novel. And I know that's important to me as a reader when I read a book, and I think that's one of the attractions as well.
Well, I think, you know, to the extent that we try as writers to, I don't know, convey a sense of what the world is really like, I think we have to include, you know, not only the sort of tawdry and violent, but also the fact that, you know, most people really behave pretty well.
Yes.
You know, and any picture of a fictional world in which people don't, it really seems to me to be, I don't know, sort of contrary to most people's experience. And, you know, people often act under sort of, well, I don't know, let's say admirable motives. I mean, you know, even if you look at it in reverse as a negative, you say to, I saw a police officer on television not long ago, a detective, saying, well, you know, there are only two reasons why people kill people. It's, you know, love and money.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, love is not always a a violent or jealous sort of thing. It's often, you know, something, well, let's say it's most of the time very positive.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And, Tom, now that you're just, now that Silence is available in the stores, and you're starting to get some feedback, you've gotten some good reviews, what is it that you're happiest with about Silence now that it's seen the light of day, now that the journey is, you're at this point in the journey and you're starting to get some feedback, what are you happiest about that you feel that you accomplished as a writer, as an author with Silence?
Well, you know, I think that every time you write, your main job is actually not pleasing people,
mm-hmm.
much as trying to learn to be a better writer.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the main job of a writer, is learning to be better at it. And I think in this particular case, I learned really a lot of things about the process and about how far you can go in sort of, I don't know, loading up a character with all of the dimensions that you know, we see in actual human beings and, you know, that sort of thing. I mean,
mm-hmm.
there are all kinds of little technical things that I, not solving, but at least thinking about them and working over those problems. You know, I think I made a certain amount of progress as a writer.
Good, good.
That the books after this will probably be better.
Excellent.
Which makes me happy.
Absolutely, absolutely. And my guest today has been Thomas Perry. We've been discussing Silence, published by Harcourt under the Otto Penzler imprint. I would also like to mention, Tom, that there is a Nightlife is now available in paperback, which I think readers will enjoy. The entire Jane Whitefield series, highly recommended. So your longtime fans are going to enjoy Silence, I think. Those that haven't discovered your writing yet, to me as a reader, there's nothing better than reading a novel by someone I really like and then seeing that they have a large body of work behind it, so I can get to work on getting caught up with the other books they've read as well. So, you know, congratulations on Silence, and thank you so much for, you know, spending so much time with us today.
Thank you, Casey. I really enjoyed it.
And good luck on your tour, and we'll catch up with you down the road when the next book comes out.
Okay, thank you.